I'm Sam Mitchell. These are my stories. Howdy, folks. I hope you're having a good day today. Let me the first welcome you to Autism Rocks and Rolls. Now, before we begin, I must know that I'm not our psychiatrist. If you're starting to be diagnosed with autism, please see a physician. I always base on my experiences. I also do not own the rights to the intro and outro that are found on ytmp3.com. I also have a mission statement I'd like to review with all of you. The mission of Autism Rocks and Rolls is to take the stigma off of autism and other conditions and many are disabilities. People on the spectrum are not broken, do not need to be fixed. Those who have conditions or abilities don't have to be pitied. There's nothing to be sorry about. I also have some paid for the following. There are more sponsors for our gala. They are Bloom Pediatric Dentistry, Bedford Federal Bank, Farmers and Mechanics, and Debbie Drake. We are thankful for your help. There's been an upgrade with my connection to Farm Bureau because I not only have the Bedford one as a gala sponsor, but now I have the whole corporation. The Indiana Farm Bureau found an insurance firm on October 18, 1934, when the goal of offering better insurance options to farmers in Indiana. All Hoosiers can now get home, vehicle, life, business, renters, farm and crop, and other insurance products from Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance. The goal of Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance is to safeguard your family. We don't just want to sell your goods and services for assistance with your insurance journey. You can reach out to a network of reliable experts and resources via phone, online, or in person at a physical location. Get in touch now for a quote. And there are some people I'd like to thank. First, I must thank my previous guest, Mateo Esposito, in C258, causing a scene with Mateo Esposito for more information. What a polite Canadian. Be sure to look at his work. It is very motivational and truthful. In Lake County, the Special Needs Club is doing a birthday club fundraiser for Autism Acceptance Month. Be sure to donate to their upcoming raffle. We've also recently met with our friends Perry and Renee Fowler about gala ideas. We are always thankful to the Fowlers. That's not the only meeting because we've recently had our monthly board meeting. Through this meeting, we spoke more about our database. Keep looking for it because it is not worth missing. Finally, I have been on 3 podcasts. I was on the Letha's Real podcast with Belle Outspoken, the Pods Like Us podcast with Martin Quibell, and the Inside Wink podcast with John Trebek and her co-host, Allison Martin. What great podcast, everyone. Now, folks, we'll be right back. We're going to hear an ad for the Woolery Mill, so let's get to it. In Bloomington, Indiana, located on Sunstone Drive, you should stop by the One World at Woolery Mill, because it's in the title. It's one world. In 1939, Henry Woolery first constructed the Woolery Mill featuring enormous windows, exposed beams, and high ceilings. It has since been renovated to an industrial space. One World at Woolery Mill is a complete event facility that provides a long list of convenience and facilities along with a great place to get together with loved ones. This classic place is concentrating on improving rather than expanding. They are proud to be a locally owned, independent business that aims to imbue its offerings with the unique spirits of Bloomington. They also want to contribute positively to our community. They want to help the community members as well as the incredible NGOs in the region whenever they can. We will be holding our gala there in April as a result of this assistance. Make sure to attend. In addition to being for gals like the Fowler Pumpkin Patch, it provides wedding services. At 76,000 square feet and located on the historic register, Woolery Mill offers exclusive use of the building and grounds, numerous outdoors areas for ceremonies to be held on site. Make your Woolery Mill reservation now for your wedding coming up. All right, folks, we're back. It won't be I like to move it, but I like to mill it. I have with me the former sponsor of this podcast and the owner of catering food truck business, Great White Smokes, Dave White. Mr. White grew up in Salisbury, Indiana, and has worked at places such as Abel's Nursery and at Indiana University, where he cooked in the dorm hall kitchens. He has described himself as a country kid with no internet and at best a cordless phone. He spent time in the woods with his friends, running around the creek, and being outdoors as long as his parents let him. He also studied horticulture technology and entered the workforce, where he stayed for the next 15 years. When it was wintertime, he still worked in the kitchen as a bartender at nightclubs and golf resorts. In 2013, his son was born with Down syndrome and other medical issues that led him to stay at Riley Hospital for his first 35 days. However, did not keep him from being voted Indiana's number one food truck in 2021. Let's welcome the giving back Dave White. My friend, how are we doing?
Hey, Sam. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Good to hear from you, too. So my first question to you is, what does having a son with Down syndrome mean to you?
In the beginning, I didn't know what to think. We found out preterm that he was going to have Down syndrome. It was just an adjustment. I didn't know what to expect. So we've studied, and nothing that we studied really prepared us for the things he would have going on in his life medically. But it's just been a joy, man. He's the happiest guy. I mean, he's growing strong. We're just grateful that he is healthy. He takes him a little longer to do things. Took him a little longer to walk, a little longer to talk. He still has speech therapy and stuff to go through. true, but just learning the things like his biggest setbacks would be that low tone. I thought, well, that was going to be really tough for him, but he runs, throws, walks. He really is not as limited as I thought he would be when we found out before he was born. He's taught me to be more patient, maybe a little kinder. If anything, he's made me a better person.
Can you tell us some of the stuff you had to research?
Well, I just didn't know there's a wide range when it comes to Trisomy 21. And I think my first question was, how does Trisomy 21 happen? What's the clinical on that? And it's a third copy of the 21st chromosome, which I thought that was really interesting. And if anything, you know, he's more than the rest. I think a lot of time people look at people with Down syndrome like they're less, and when in fact they're more. And I tell you, he is so sharp. I mean, he can navigate. I really do think that he is gifted in a lot of ways that, you know, even I'm not, as far as like his memory and his repetitive muscle, a lot of those things I think he's actually better at than me. He can navigate an iPad way better than I ever could.
I'm the same way a little bit, but it must be also that generation too.
He had some other stuff. He had a hole in his heart, which is pretty normal for people with Down syndrome. It's called a VSD, ventral septal disorder. We're really lucky. A lot of people with Down syndrome have to end up having heart surgery pretty young, and his was able to grow closed over his first like 4 or 5 years. We still check it up every now and then. He has a floppier airway where your trachea pops open when you and I breathe. It's an involuntary muscle. So part of his floppier muscle is that airway flops when he's closed. So it's kind of like sleep apnea. So we have to do sleep studies. He's got a couple things where that low muscle tone really makes his involuntary muscles work against him.
I have sleep apnea. I can relate to that too, actually. It's odd. My brain won't breathe at night. And my doctors say, well, it's because of the autism. Well, I'm not going to bash the doctors, but I respectfully disagree. I think it's the ADHD, because that ADHD makes my brain keep rolling.
Yeah, I could see that. That is something they're learning more about, that ADHD. And guys in my generation, I think it was more prevalent and underdiagnosed back then, because I got some buddies that feel the same way. It's hard to read for concentrate, or like hard to remember it, or not be thinking about something else while you're reading it.
To the listeners, if you want more information on that, C257 ADHD. I want to get more into your son. So based on your observations, how do you think your son's brain operates having Down syndrome?
I think his brain operates just like me and you. I really do. I think the bigger struggle is for him to communicate it. Your tongue is a muscle, and it being undertoned is just like if you can't flex your arm all the way. If he can't flex your tongue all the way, you can't say words like you and I say effortlessly. For him, we're working on getting, I forget the name of the pad, but it's basically he can put in the pad what he wants it to say, and then it'll say it for him. But I know that his brain is working so well, because like we were talking about the iPad, when he wants to communicate with me, he'll use YouTube, and he can't spell or write. He's still 11. He knows his whole alphabet. Without him being able to speak and communicate it that way, he's not been able to spell big words. But he can go onto YouTube and find any video he wants and show you pictures of things to literally tell you what he wants to tell you. It's amazing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
I can relate to that, because I feel like autism and Down syndrome, we do have a hard time communicating. Maybe his is for physical reasons, mine is for mental reasons, because I know I want to say, I just can't put the words together. And sometimes it comes across as disrespectful when I'm literally not trying to be.
I totally get that. I can see him get frustrated, because he'll say words and a lot of them sound the same. He can say certain sounds, but he has trouble with other sounds. One of his favorite toys is named Teddy, and then he has another Diddy Kong toy, so he'll say Diddy. And Diddy and Teddy sound so much alike that sometimes I don't know which one he wants. He'll literally, instead of asking me where Teddy or Diddy is, he'll look up a Diddy Kong video or something called Teddy, show me that that's what he wants. I'm anxious to get this new machine and to learn how it operates. I don't know if it's picture cues. I think it's going to help him a lot.
What advice would you give to other parents who just learned that they had a child with Down syndrome?
When we left Bloomington Hospital at 4 days and he had to go to Riley because he wasn't getting enough oxygen, I looked at my wife and I said, well, what are we going to do? Because we both worked. We didn't know how many days off of work. She looked at me and said, we're going to take it a day at a time. And that stuck with me and resonated with me. Anytime anything got where I felt overwhelmed, I just thought, I'm going to do my best today for him and to be a good dad. If I make mistakes today, I'll try to fix those mistakes and not do them tomorrow and carry that on in. I mean, as a parent, you want the best for your kid. You want them to have the easiest, nicest, best life. And we all know that, you know, the world is just not always like that in any circumstance. Let your child set the pace for how they learn and grow. They're going to do what nature does. Don't try to push too hard. Push and help grow. But don't let it frustrate you to the point you're not doing your best for them.
Well, how can parents find the balance of not being over pushy, but at the same time showing their child that I won't be here forever?
That's really it. I think it's hard. And especially, you know, if you've got a kid that you feel like is going to have a harder time doing things, harder for you to be, I don't want to say the bully, because you're right, it's a fine line. There has to be a point where you say, okay, now you're just trying to make mom and dad baby you. I know you can do better than this. You know, and I think that's the same for any parenting. Kids will be kids, and kids will get out of chores if you'll let them, and they'll take the easy way out. And I think that is just being firm but loving and communicating. I don't think there's a such thing as over-communicating. Just reiterating that you love them and you want what's best for them and that this is going to help them. Like you said, you can tell them, we're not going to be here forever and you're going to have to figure this thing out.
Yeah, I've learned that the hard way. I used my disability as an excuse twice. I got ripped a new one.
And I'm sure at times it's frustrating. You're learning to navigate your own life too and make decisions. And sometimes you need to be able to express. That's what we've talked about with him. Different if he wants to use it to try to get out of something. But at the same time, you got to understand that he has feelings too. And he's trying to learn how to do his best too.
That's what we're all doing at the end of the day, is just doing our best.
You can only do the best you can with the time you got, man.
You got to talk about more about Great White Smoke. So can you tell us about the transition from you doing landscaping to starting Great White Smokes?
I went to Vincennes. I got a horticulture degree because, like you were talking about, I was a kid, played sports at Eastern. In the wintertime, Abel, we'd dig Christmas trees, and he would work around my sports. And in the summer times, I would mow grass for the Sparks family. They had a lawn care business, and they would work around baseball. In the winter, a lot of times there's no landscaping to do, so I worked at IU, where my dad worked, in the kitchens. I always had both, but I always thought that landscaping would be my actual job where I got paid. So when Grayson was born, we were at Riley for 35 days. I asked Jess what we were going to do, and a nurse suggested trying to do a bake sale at a store somewhere. We set up in front of Kroger with cookies, and they asked us if we wanted to do a cookout the next week. They give us hamburgers and hot dogs, and we made Jessica's crock pot pulled pork. And it was such a hit that people were calling the store and asked when we would be coming back. We decided that it was time to try to build a food truck. So we took that money week by week, built the food truck. And I was doing both landscaping and the food truck. But the food truck made us so busy that I just had to give up landscaping eventually. I never would have thought that was going to be my career. It really kind of surprised me. But it's funny how sometimes things you're just good at get in your path and then take over.
Do you have days where you miss landscaping?
When I was landscaping, I always told my customers and clients that I was really lucky to have what some people consider a hobby for a job. Because to some people, you know, gardening is just a hobby. And I got to do it in everybody's yard all day, every day. There are times, but I'll tell you, man, it's really hard on the body. I don't miss my back feeling the way it did some nights after building walls or planting big trees. So I'm still lucky that I can do that kind of stuff in my yard, and I'm thankful for the knowledge to be able to do all of it and know all my plants. But barbecue is another thing that's kind of like a hobby to some people, so I get to do that. I've had two careers that were both hobbies for some people. So feel pretty lucky.
You are a lucky man, but I can also tell you're a grateful one too. I can see that you give back a lot. That's why I said in the intro, giving back.
I had somebody say this to me one time, and I think it's just the coolest advice. When you have an ability, it becomes a responsibility. If you have the ability to feed a bunch of people or do good, and you're able to do it, then it becomes a responsibility. You should be giving back if you're able.
What would you say is the most popular food that sells through Great White Smokes?
I'd have to say the pulled pork nachos over the years have probably been the big winner. We got good sandwiches like the Motley Q and the Creamy Carolina. Those are really popular. The Motley Q has nacho cheese and jalapenos, and the Creamy Carolina has coleslaw. But the loaded nachos are what everybody, when they say, where are you going? I gotta get some nachos.
I didn't get to tell you this, but during my grandfather's funeral, rest in peace, Papa Gary, but when you catered for our funeral, I'll tell you what's a success for that. Your smoked wings. Those were a hit, man.
That's really cool. Those have been really popular. We don't always do them on the truck because I like to be able to cook them right before people are going to get them. Catering, it's the last thing you cook before it goes. But my sister-in-law, who works on the truck with us, you probably met her, Angela. She was a manager at Buffalo's. So she brought some of what she learned at Buffalo's to us, and then we added smoke to it, and it's been pretty good. They're one of my favorites to eat, for sure.
I'll join that club with you, my friend. What does an average day look like on a competition day for Great White Smokes?
Really start on the week of. On Wednesday, you kind of try to get your whole trailer loaded because you'll roll into a competition on a Friday afternoon and then get set up. Usually Saturday morning, about 4 a.m. is when you start cooking. The barbecue community, some of the best friends that are now like my lifelong friends were guys that I met that were competitors. You're parked next to these guys all the time and you start seeing each other on the trail. Before you know it, you got friends in every county. We've got the Hoosiers with Hearts. That whole thing is a network of these competitions. And cooks. Friday nights, we hang out, we cook, we might make a potluck dinner, and then Saturday, we fight to the death for barbecue glory.
All the gloves are off.
It's all friendly Friday, Saturday, anything goes.
In a sense, you're frenemies.
But the cool part is you could win, and on the way home, have a flat tire, and they still wouldn't be so mad they wouldn't come help you. Great bunch of guys.
But I bet you at this point need them.
Well, I started in a league, and as we've grown and got sponsors, I've been able to take some of these guys with me to these big cooks. We've been places like Kansas City. We're going to Memphis in May this year. Those are some of the biggest competitions. They're world championships. So instead of trying to cook those alone, we'll team up and say, okay, I'm best at pork, but you're best at ribs, and this guy's the best at chicken. So we'll all cook together and try to win world championships. Got friends in low and high places.
So I want to know more about how you help your son with his Down syndrome, minus the iPad. Could you tell us about any other resources that you've used to help your son with Down syndrome?
The occupational therapy's been really good, and we've used a couple of different places. We say he used to have, we called it scrub aversion. When we'd go and see a doctor and all the nurses are wearing scrubs, we would go to a place that was just for therapy. You could tell him, hey, you're not getting any shots. He wouldn't want to participate in the therapy because he just didn't trust the scrubs. We may go one time and it'd be not very productive because he's just not feeling it, and trying to give him a routine.
Right. That's a good one too. And that's for the autism spectrum as well. You want to check that episode, C106 Daily Changes. Routine gives your son hope and a life that makes sense.
You probably know this, and some of the listeners wouldn't. This latest thing is we just got a G-tube, gastrostomy tube. I don't know. We've never figured out why he would quit eating. That's where we started to maybe pick up where maybe some of it had to do with the autism, and it's just the textures. He was a really picky eater anyway. He won't eat anything that he has to eat with a fork, so he wants pizza, chicken nuggets, Cheetos, Doritos, candy. He would eat, you know, burgers from McDonald's. It was hard to get him a really good, balanced, healthy diet because we didn't want him to skip meals. So if he wanted to eat, we would try to let him eat whatever he would eat. And then last year, he quit eating. He had quit eating for 20 days. We were in the hospital twice in that 20 days to make sure his iron and all of his levels were good. But I think that's the hardest thing is for you to look at him and say, bud, you got to eat. and him to look back at you but not say, I don't want to, because he just won't tell you why, and he'll just shut down. And it was an adjustment, but now if you say, hey, you want, he calls it his string, because you hook up this tube, say, hey, you want your string, he'll jump right up there, and he loves it. And so we're able to control his vitamins, his nutrition, his caloric intake, his macronutrients. We're able to control all that stuff so much better with the tube. Now hopefully he'll start eating again. But for now, it's been nice to be able to at least make sure he's safe and healthy.
Do you think maybe he didn't tell you because he was embarrassed?
I don't think so. This is a gruesome story, okay? When he was 18 months old, we went to Riley and he was going to get a bronchoscope because they thought that he was basically like sucking some fluids into his lungs when he was sleeping. So they wanted to go in through his mouth and spray into his lungs and then suck that stuff out and then test that stuff that they sucked out. Well, they didn't sedate him. They didn't put him to sleep before they put the tubes down his throat. He screamed so hard that we think it hurt his throat. It busted capillaries. His doctor that ordered it was furious because you're not supposed to do what they did without sedating him. It's really dangerous because he screamed against that tube so hard. He would eat everything when he was a little baby even. He choked 3 times really bad before he was 5, and I had to Heimlich him. And a Heimlich to a baby isn't like an adult where you get behind them and pump their chest. You got to put him on your arm and hit him in the back. For him, all he knows is, man, I'm struggling, I'm choking, and now Dad is beating the crap out of me. We wonder if his fear of choking on certain foods might have, I think more than embarrassed, maybe he was afraid that he would choke. He knows that he's never choked on this string.
I could see that. Reminds me of, I saw a clip of young Sheldon where Sheldon kind of choked on a sausage, and since then he refused to eat. So what is Meemaw did was he would make milkshake. Have you ever heard of a pork shake?
No kidding.
He drank that, went through a bendy straw.
That's awesome. No, when Grayson was a baby, when I say a baby, I mean like 15 months, he would eat little pieces of rib. We would take it all off the bone, but I mean, he would eat that stuff and love it. We just think that it's kind of a combination of those things. I'll tell you another thing he did, and this is what we think, maybe the choking was part of it, but it was like he laughed while he was eating and he blew some food out his nose. He did that with pizza, and I think it hurt really, really bad. We literally just put Pediasure in it, is what you feed him. It's a liquid diet. Now, that's fine. And it's good that it's there. We're so thankful that that is an option. But man, I really would love to see him smashing pizza again with me sometime.
You both could smash it, but maybe he's just smashing it in a different way.
That's a very good way to look at it. And that's how he is. He plays with his food truck. A lot of the games on his iPad and even the learning games that he wants are food game. Be like, you're making cookies, red sprinkle, put the blue sprinkle. He still wants to play food games. And he'll even ask for me to put Cheetos in a bowl and I'll put them out. And he wants to smell them, but then he wants his tube for food.
Your son should try this game on Cool Math Games that I used to play. It was like a franchise called Papa's. So it'd be like Papa's Pizzeria, Papa's Wingeria, yeah. Papa's Burgeria. I think there's even a Papa's Pancakeria.
Ordering
the food, putting it on there. You put the syrup on yourself. That might be a good game for your son to try out.
I think so, and I think he would like that because there's another one where it's little math, but it's making change. You got to make the change for your customers as they come through.
So I want to talk to you about our hometown because we're from Greene County. I think there's something special about it, but what to you is so special about Salisbury, Indiana and Greene County?
Been all over the place, man. This barbecue stuff. I've been south, west, east, north. I moved away twice and lived in Bloomington for a good chunk of time after high school. Part of it is, you know, we've all got big property out here. Like when you're in Bloomington, you have no privacy in your yard and peace and quiet when you want it. Sometimes, you know, I lived at Eagle Point, which is a golf resort, like apartments. Sometimes you just want it to be peaceful and you can't make everybody else, if they're wanting to have fun, be quiet. And the community, your mom and your Uncle Joe, I mean, me and your Uncle Joe go all the way back to kindergarten. I could see him. We've been out of school for 25 years. And if I seen Joe at Lowe's, we could stop and talk like we had seen each other yesterday.
Plus, I bet you're tired of hearing from the golf club. Whoopish, whoopish, whoopish.
Yes. But there's so many people that still live out here. And you mentioned Perry and Renee Fowler. The reason I give back is because good old Salisbury is built on those kind of people's morals, where the generations ahead of us, it's old farmer. In a farm community, when the neighbor needs help, the neighborhood shows up. In a neighborhood like Greene County, it's not like just the neighbors down the street. It's the whole community's going to show up for you. And they have for my family. Times when Bub's been in the hospital, though, just last year, the whole community rallied up at Fowler's barn and they raised money for us to help pay for the hotels and the days off of work we were missing.
So I want to talk to you more about your horticulture. So who or what interests your work in horticulture, and why did you pick Vincennes University for your college education?
So I always was around landscaping for work, and with Abel's Nursery, the Abel family has been out here doing tree farms for, I think they're on their fourth generation of family growing those trees. From the outside looking in, I always saw a bunch of trees, but when I started working, I realized that there were so many different kinds of trees. Like, you see a pine tree and you think, oh, a pine tree. Well, there's 13 kinds of pine trees and 10 kinds of spruce trees, and I wanted to learn more, and Vincennes came to Eastern for a career day. The person, they spoke highly of their horticulture program, and I took a visit and went to Harrison Hall and took the little tour, and I liked the curriculum. I liked what I was going to learn, so I decided it was a good fit back then. That was pre-technology, so there weren't any internet jobs back then or tech jobs. Your choices were like dig ditches or do hard work or go get a banker's job.
And Vincennes University is a pretty cool campus because I'm going there right now for broadcasting, but I don't know if their most popular program is the horticulture one. I think their biggest one is the conservatory law enforcement one currently. Was that still popular when you went?
Absolutely. And that was actually, we were in the fourth floor of Harrison Hall, and all of the law and like police and conservation was on the third floor. When we would have breaks in between classes, we would see a lot of those guys down there. And I think that's part of the time change. It was 20 years ago. Broadcasting was in the same building too, and it was pretty popular. But Purdue was pretty well known as the best agriculture school and the best horticulture school. For a two-year school, Vincennes operated off of Purdue's exact curriculum.
Now I want to talk to you more about your bartending. So how did you end up as a bartender?
So it's a pretty wild story. I worked in restaurants, like I said, and kind of around. I was hanging out in Bloomington just with some friends up on the square. That's kind of what us old guys did back then. And was telling a buddy that I was getting ready to get laid off for a landscape job for the winter. And it turns out, see, I'd coached this guy. He was about 6 years behind me in school. When I was just finished my senior year, I coached Babe Ruth, and I ended up coaching this guy. Well, he said, my mom is the manager down at Kilroy's on Kirkwood. And he said, go in there and tell her that I sent you in. And she gave me a job waiting tables. In about 3 months, I worked my way up to bartender.
Wow.
It was a blast. Yeah.
I bet it was a blast. And I could see too, I think you have the personality for bartending, because with bartending, you got to have charisma. You can't just be like, hey, you got to be like, hey, what's up? How you doing? How's the family doing? I'll be right there with you in a minute.
Where our bar was is right off of the Indiana campus, right by the sample gates. And we were open for lunch and dinner. Those are the shifts I would usually work. So I would get people coming over on their lunch break. And then you had the crew that came over right after work to stop in for dinner and a beer. And it would be professors. So it was kind of fun because you got a bar, say it's 50 feet long, and you've got all these different couples sitting at it. So going person to person, it's kind of like just dropping into conversations all down the bar. You never know what you might learn sitting there and talking to those kind of people.
But were there any times you had to handle an unruly crew? If so, tell me a time you had to deal with one, or was that for the bouncer?
There were a lot, especially at Kilroy's, because it was a college bar. The college kids would come in late from about 7 o'clock at night to about 10 o'clock. You've got the changing of the guard, kind of the older, middle-aged people getting off work, and you got the young kids coming in. Usually that crowd is kind of some spoiled, kind of richy kids who maybe didn't have great manners. I had just got off. We were going to eat, a couple of us, and then go around town. At the end of the bar, what was called a VIP area, and it's basically for employees. So this kid was trying to stand there. He was already drunk when he got to the bar. He ended up mouthing off to one of the guys there, and we basically stood up and told him that it was time to go. Well, he punches the guy next to me. So I pushed him out the side door, just like my hands in his chest, pushing him like a football move. And when I turn around, his girlfriend, who I had no idea was even there, she's swinging a haymaker at me, and I lean back and dodge it like the Matrix. And then another girl jumped over the bar, grabbed her by the hair, and threw her out the door. It was the making of like a Royal Rumble feel, because the bar was so full and there were so many people that only two of them were hostile. But after you push one out and one swings at you, you're looking at this crowd like, who's next?
Instead of over the top rope, it's out the door with both feet hitting the floor.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Said the Royal Rumble, it's the door rumble.
Well, it's kind of like the old cage matches. You had to escape out the door for those, though. Maybe throw them out the side door.
Right, exactly. Now, folks, we'll be right back here with an ad from the Doug Flutie Jr. Autism Foundation. So let's get to it. At the Doug Flutie Autism Foundation in Massachusetts, people are receiving hope. The organization was established in 1998 by Doug Flutie, former quarterback for Boston College and the NFL, and his wife, Lori, in the memory of their son, Dougie, who was diagnosed with autism at the age of three. The goal of the Flutie Foundation is to improve the quality of life for those with autism and their families. The biggest action they like to do is give grants and host their annual Stars on the Spectrum golf event. Our goal is to offer chances for physical and social activity outside of work or school, a path for education or employment during the day, and the resources needed to always feel safe, supported, and informed, the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation says. Make sure to visit them on their website, www.flutiefoundation.org. That's www.flutiefoundation.org. Or follow them on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or even YouTube to see all the stars they have to offer. And you never know, you might be able to meet one of their stars if you are so kind and they allow you to do so. Finally, if this was a testimony, this would be my testimony for the Doug Jr. Autism Foundation. All right, folks, we're back. You might meet Doug Flutie there. You never know. So, David, I want to hear about you receiving this number one food truck in 2021 award. So how did you feel when you learned that you were Indiana's number one food truck in 2021?
It was pretty cool. It's Sam's Club and Member's Mark, which is their brand, and Weber Seasonings, like, you know, the Weber Grills. They had this contest where it was actually all across the country, and there were challenges they would give you each week, and it would be like, post a picture of making a chicken dish with this rub. Each week would be, the next week it would be ribs, and you would get bonus points for showing your truck out on the street. And so a lot of it was based on Twitter and Facebook. It was all social media driven. And the way you would win is you had to be out there working a lot, and you had to be posting a lot, because we ended up winning $5,000 too when we won that title. Not only were we chasing that, but it was making our social media grow, because it was forcing us to be more active on social media. It was a win-win-win for us.
It really was, but I'm not listing your other awards because there are a lot. Let's put it this way. Tag, you're it. Can you tell us some of the awards you've won?
Just thinking off the top, the number one food truck in America. We've won a contest called King the Q. That's for the Kentuckiana Barbecue Pitmasters. We've won that twice. We won, it was called Kakalaki, was the Barbecue Warrior in 2021. We won the Grand Champion for the Barbecue Warrior. I know there's some I'm forgetting. We've been to the Royal Oak Invitational. That's a win in itself. They only invite, I think it's like 28 or 30 teams, like the best in the world. They take you out to Georgia, their corporate campus, just beautiful.
So I also know you have sponsorships. Could you tell me some of the sponsorships that Great White Smoke has?
Yeah, nationally, we've got companies like, you know, Royal Oak Charcoal, which we had used them for a long time. That's just the best charcoal on the market, in my opinion. Curveball Whiskey, been a great sponsor. We go to the American Royal with them. We're going to Memphis in May. Springer Mountain Farms as a chicken, and you can get that here locally at our Fresh Times. Barbecue Guru, Prairie Fresh. We got Vacmaster, which is an awesome chamber sealer. Tormek is a knife sharpener. But locally, one of our best sponsors has always been Bobcat Velletsville. They always step up if we're hosting an event or if we need something. They're always there to get our back.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. They were once upon a time my sponsors too.
Bob Curl and Nikki, I'm sure you know those guys, and they're part of the Southern Indiana Side-by-Side group. They're great role models. They're a couple years older than me. I'm just really thankful to have them for friends and glad that we've been able to meet and do the things we've been able to do together.
So I want to know about more of this Food Network's NFL tailgate takedown you were on. So did you meet any famous or cool people from your appearance? And I say quote-unquote appearance because you said you're on the sidelines mainly on Food Network's NFL tailgate takedown.
We got called. We had to go through a bunch of stuff to get cast for that. Do Zoom calls, phone calls. So we make it down to the final four teams. So on those shows, they always have what they call an alternate team because, say, the team that's on the show cuts their hand or gets burnt or gets hurt, they got to be able to still shoot their show. They'd have to start over and bring the other team in. We ended up being the alternates. But they still flew us out to Denver. I mean, the game that we were going to represent the Indianapolis Colts, since we're from Indiana. And we were going up against Broncos. So I thought, oh, this is perfect. We got the whole beef over them getting Peyton Manning. It was really cool to see it, but it was pretty bittersweet to not get to cook because we had such a good menu planned. I think it'll forever haunt me to not know if ours was good enough to win or not.
If only we had time machines.
I'd spike the punch for the team the night before, or maybe like slip something in their caviar to give them the runs.
So we could... Not a bad idea. I know you're the owner of Hoosier with Hearts Disaster Relief Team. So can you tell me what the Hoosier with Hearts Disaster Relief Team does?
Basically, when the floods happened in Kentucky, that was our first where we were saying we had the ability, so it became the responsibility, knowing that we've done IU football with our food truck. I mean, that's like 70,000 people in a parking lot. So when those floods happened, I thought it's not right for us to be able to feed this many people and only be a few hours away and not try to go help them. We went down there, and when the word got out that we were going, our cell phone started ringing with people saying, hey, let us send you some money on Venmo. How can we help? Do you need anybody else down there? And when we saw that it was such a big network of people that wanted to help, we just decided to get with Romans Warrior Foundation and get our nonprofit status set so that instead of people sending money, that at least if they were sending it to Hoosiers with Hearts, it would be a tax write-off for them. It's a win-win for the people that want to give cash, and it's a win-win for the victims. What it looks like on a disaster day is we roll into town with smokers, bottles of water, cleaning supplies for your house, whatever we can bring to help clean up the disaster, plus hot meals for people who may otherwise not have a hot meal for several days sometimes.
And I bet you're making their day because they're probably thinking, how am I going to survive? I don't have food. I don't have shelter. I don't have water. I'm probably have to sleep on the grass even.
We've definitely been places where people have said, this is the first food I've had in 4 days, you know, or so. You think about that. You'd be happy for anything. Can you imagine 4 days and you'd kill for bologna and all of a sudden here's a big pulled pork sandwich and mac and cheese and baked beans? And that's what the soul needs on a day like that. When you're having that bad a day, a good meal like that should be the least of your worries.
Now, folks, we'll be right back here in ad from Unlocking the Spectrum. So let's get to it.
At Unlocking the Spectrum, we are committed to making the highest quality ABA therapy accessible to all children with autism. We pride ourselves in offering fun, compassionate, and data-driven programs for individuals with autism and unparalleled support for their families. Our personalized approach means that every unique child is given just what they need to reach their maximum potential. We are so happy to support Sam in his mission of taking the stigma off of autism. You can learn more about our services and employment opportunities in both Indiana and Texas at unlockingthespectrum.com or by calling 855-INFO-UTS. That's 855-INFO-UTS.
All right, folks, we're back. We'll unlock the key to success if you check this place out. So I want to talk to you more about this long description that you described yourself with, David. That is a country kid with no internet and at best a cordless phone. When the cordless phones comes out, what was it like to receive one of those cordless phones?
It was pretty wild when you're a kid. And I mean, if you can even picture it, it's so funny. I heard somebody else saying to try to tell our kids these stories, it's like our parents talking about they went to school uphill both ways in the snow. I don't know if kids these days can even imagine if you even had a phone in your bedroom. I mean, Dude, that was like unheard of. So if you wanted to talk pins or your girlfriend, you'd have to do it right in the living room and only as far as that cord on that phone would reach. No privacy, no text, no Snapchat, instant message. You had to talk on the phone. So when the cordless phone came out and you could take that baby to your bedroom, it was like a whole new world. The only problem then was the batteries died. So you had to make sure you stayed on top of keeping that thing charged up. Otherwise, you're back to the old cord phone in the kitchen.
I can see that. And I question, given these kids' privacy, if that's good or bad. I think it's good because as we get older, children should have their own life, but it's bad as well because they could get hooked up with the wrong crowd and the parents don't know about it, which would bother me if I was a parent.
Another one of my very favorite, when something is a gift and a curse. Like technology is such a gift and a curse. And you're right, kids are entitled to that privacy and they should be able to have those conversations. But just like with the internet now, we were able to have conversations. You know, anything we're trying to hide from our parents was probably not always a great thing. And now the internet is so much worse because now you got stuff like cyberbullying, where back in my day, you'd see bullies at school, but when you went home, unless the bully lived in your neighborhood, you just had your friends around and they couldn't call you on the phone. A bully wouldn't call you most times. He might prank call you, but he wouldn't call you where, like now with the internet, a bully can be in your inbox. My day of the corded phone, if you weren't home, people had to leave you a message and deal with it, and they couldn't prove that you've seen it or heard it or read it because there wasn't a little bar at the bottom of the screen saying read, sent, delivered. The internet makes you kind of, back then, feel like life was a lot more simple.
Right. But I also think it depends on age. In my opinion, if you're in middle school, I'm sorry, but you need to have one of those things that parents put on their phone that tracks the text messages. But when you're in high school, I think we could back off.
Trust, to me, is one of those things that's earned. You're given enough rope to either be a cowboy or to hang yourself. So I'll give you this freedom, but if it comes back and burns us, then you might have to deal with the consequences of your actions. As you get older and more responsible and you build more trust, you get more rope.
That's an excellent way to put it, Dave. But I wonder, is that kind of a concern with your son as he gets older? Like he might be hanging up with the wrong crowd and he doesn't know it just because he just doesn't understand that, oh, these people are bad. And I've never ran with the wrong crowd, but I know with my parents, that was a big concern.
I can say when I was a kid, I got great friends, but I'll just be honest. Some of the people, when you look back at your life, you realize that some people are users. You may be nothing more than just somebody else to blame something on or to blame the trouble on. The older you are, you find out who your real friends are. And it definitely is, as a parent, you think you can see the signs because you've been through it before. You try to steer your kids in the right direction.
But speaking of your son, let's talk to you about him a little more. So, how would you describe your son from your perspective?
Is my best friend. I tell him that all the time, and I wouldn't have thought as a 43-year-old guy that I'd have an 11-year-old best friend. Sounds kind of weird, but I see him like a sponge that just wants to soak the world up. Every time he sees something new or we experience something new together, I live through him. I see him and the feelings that you see the ocean for the first time, or a mountain, or a big bird. It's the first time you ever saw a horse. You see those emotions on their face, and getting to live a second life through your kids like that is just really rewarding.
And Dave, it's not weird. He's family. Who cares?
I tell him I love him every day, but I also make sure he knows. I'm like, you know, your dad's best friend. You got to be my best buddy.
Just out of curiosity, what are some common interests you share with your son?
Well, it's like any kid. He likes to run me through the toy section every chance he gets. Anytime we pass a store, he wants to do that, or a new game or something. But we do a lot of outdoor stuff too. We like to go to the park. We go to the movies. When the Mario movie came out, I mean, we literally went to see that so many times that the movie theater just saw us coming and they would just let us in.
They were like, oh boy, we love him so much.
Yeah.
He's coming in for free.
Kung Fu Panda 4 comes out this week, so you can bet we'll be in line for that.
Oh, I'll probably be in line with you. I've been wanting to see that one. But my question is, how many gosh darn sequels are there are going to be Kung Fu Panda?
There's all the spin-offs. There's the four movies, but man, they've also got like Secrets of the Dragon Scroll and the Furious Five.
Next thing you know, I'll be 50 years old and be like, I remember back in my day, in 2010, I watched the first one.
Well, now Despicable Me 4 comes out this summer. So now they've got four of those, and they've had two Minion movies.
That's now I hope to see as well. Now, folks, we'll be right back. We're in here an ad from the Rock 96.1 radio station in Bloomington, Indiana. So let's hear from them. We want to thank 96.1 The Quarry, especially David and Dan Hayes, for being a gold sponsor for our Summerfest. 96.1 residents in Bloomington, Indiana, and like Autism Rocks and Rolls, they rock and roll too. Visit their website at rock961fm.com to hear them out. And when they're on the station, be sure to listen to them live on their website or catch them on the radio in your car. If you like Kiss, Queen, 80s Rock, or ZZ Top, I think you have found your station. 96.1 also supports our veterans, so you should support them too. Visit 96.1. All right, folks, and we're back. You'll definitely rock out to this radio station. So what's the secret of cooking good quality meat?
Well, it's funny, you know, before we started cooking barbecue, she would always say she could tell when I was cooking in the kitchen because I try to cook everything too hot. I just wanted grilled cheese cooked in 2 minutes, burger. Well, when we started barbecuing, you've got to let it cook all night. I mean, everything. It could be 8 or 12 hours. Now, I talked earlier about how Grayson had taught me so much patience. Barbecue has done the same thing, letting that meat cook until it is just as tender as butter. When you cook barbecue, you can't guarantee it's going to be done in 8 hours. You got to just let the meat go till it's done. So you got to plan to start early so you don't get behind.
Now, I know you have family in Mississippi. Why don't you tell us about your family down there?
My mom, her mother, and her father, my grandpa was from Arkansas. So grandpa in northwest Mississippi near the Arkansas line. And when they got married, they moved up here. And that's when they had my mom, and she actually went to Eastern as well. So we are a third generation Salisbury here. There's such a big family. It's just about 45 or 60 miles south of Memphis. When I went down there, Uncle Steve has a music studio and the whole family plays music. I played bass and I played percussion there at Eastern. The love of food and barbecue and music and that culture is so rich in that part of Mississippi. It only seems right that it's part of my life.
So you also, when you were cooking meat, you were watching some TV shows to learn how to cook great meat. So what would you say was the most educational TV show you watch?
Definitely the Barbecue Pit Masters, all those contests they used to do. And that led me to going to YouTube and finding each cook, each pit master that I saw on those shows and I liked. I would go to their YouTube channels and try to watch their videos. I'd learned to barbecue from YouTube and those TV shows.
I could see them being good because they know their stuff. I mean, they're pit masters. There's another guy you got to meet, which is the Barbecue Ninja. How'd you get to meet the Barbecue Ninja?
Barbecue Ninja is a guy named Greg Verhagen. He is Royal Oak's like main brand ambassador. He's from Mississippi. They've got a business down there called Ubon's. So if you're ever through the Delta area, you definitely want to hit up Ubon's Barbecue. I met him through the sponsorship with Royal Oak. The friendship just kind of formed by staying in touch. And when Hoosiers with Hearts would go do something, Craig was always there to say, how can I help? Whether it was a donation from Royal Oak or whether it was providing me with a guy that he knew that had a trucking company or just logistical help. Craig is one of those guys that from the first time you meet him, he'll treat you like family as long as, you know, you do right by him.
There's a sign in Bob Evans I always believe, and the listeners have repeated, but I believe in this so much. You treat strangers like friends and you treat friends like family. From personal experience, you follow that, you're golden.
I've heard Craig say this, that, you know, Ubon's, like barbecue, is supposed to be a coming together. You have a barbecue on a Saturday to get friends and family together after a long week and blow off steam and just see how everybody's doing. So when you see Ubon's out and when you see Great White Smoke out at a competition, we want our area to feel like a front porch that you can come and just sit down on and get to know everybody. So everybody's invited to the front porch.
Now, I heard you're a Marvel guy. Who is your favorite Marvel character and why?
Ah, man, that's such a hard one. It is really so tough. I could make a case. Well, there's obviously like the big three, like Iron Man and Thor and Cap. I mean, they're all lot of our smokers are named after those. We've got Thor, we've got Cap, because our very first smoker, I always tell people, was the first Avenger. Star Lord, I love the Guardians, man, and Rocket, Ant-Man. What's not to love about the Marvel team?
Right, they each all are different, but my problem is that when you mix it up, so when it's comic books, they're all super friendly, let's go, woo! But then when you put them on live screen, they got a little bit of egos, and I'm like, it needs to match.
Well, it's so cool when you look back and you Stan Lee, obviously, he was the guy that came up with all of them. And then you see what the Marvel directors are doing these days. And it's got to be hard to write. But I will say, I like watching the first Avengers when you've got Cap and Tony Stark. They had beef the whole time. But in the beginning, Cap was telling Tony, you seem like such a me person. I can't see you being the guy to sacrifice himself for the team. And then we all know in Endgame, that's exactly what Tony does, is sacrifice himself for the world with the snap there. Interesting to see how they took Stan's vision and put their spin on it that way.
So we're gonna wrap it up here, David. These are just for fun questions. So what is your paradise meal or favorite food, and why is it your favorite? And before I even guess, does it have to do with meat?
That's another tough one. It kind of does. I always, growing up, like if you had to ask, okay, what do you want for your birthday meal? I love lasagna. And I think that's part of Garfield's fault because those were my favorite books when I was in elementary. I have just never met a lasagna that I didn't like.
I'm a lasagna guy too, but I wouldn't have it every day.
Another one of my heroes is Ron Swanson. You familiar with Swanson and Parks and Rec?
No, sir.
Well, sometime you just got to binge Parks and Rec and just focus in on Ron Swanson, man. He's got a lot of great one-liners and knowledge, but in one of them, he says, there is no sadness that cannot be cured by breakfast food. Like, I could do breakfast food anytime.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, breakfast food has some of the best meats provided, like the sausage, the bacon.
There is nothing that bacon can't fix. It is the duct tape of the food world.
Now, what has been your favorite movie or TV show, and why do you like it?
I've been taking some deep dives. I didn't watch Game of Thrones or Yellowwood through the whole hype. Like, I just waited and I didn't let people tell me about them. I didn't want to hear about them because I like to like binge watch. I don't want to wait until next week. But I really enjoyed both Game of Thrones and Yellowstone. I'm a big like swamp people. I like the Gator Show and the Serpent Show where they catch the.
Kind of, I remember one, but it got canceled. This is a old one back in the 2010s, maybe. Call of the Wild Man with the Turtle Man.
Love the Turtle Man. I tell you another good one that got canceled was Billy the Exterminator. He was kind of like Turtle Man, but he was a rocker and they had an extermination company.
Now, what's been your favorite vacation you've ever taken, and why'd you enjoy that vacation very much?
That's a tough one too. You know, I have such fond memories of my childhood in Mississippi, going down there and spending summers. And Uncle Steve, I just remember these huge family jam sessions. But as an adult, we just took one to Missouri with my family. It was for a barbecue show, but just having the whole family, you know, take one of those.
Well, I'll tell you this, a good place to fish, if you're a fisherman or have to catch good fish to cook, is Batesville, Mississippi. That is a good spot to fish. I know a lot of people say go to Grenada. I have nothing against Grenada. It's
Sam,
good too, but Batesville's pretty cool.
I want to tell you something. My grandma and my whole family is from Batesville, Mississippi. So we would go down there, and I know where Grenada is, and we would fish a lake called Lake Sardis. You ever heard of that one down there?
Lake Sardis, maybe. I'm not 100% sure, but I remember when we went to a park called George P. Soser State Park. It was a little hole in the wall park, but they had really good lakes. If you didn't want the crowd around, you would fish there.
Batesville, Mississippi is the first place I ever saw an all-you-can-eat barbecue buffet. How cool is that?
Yeah, that is cool, but it has to be hot barbecue. Maybe barbecue that's a little spicy, because I'm a big fan of hot foods.
There's a Hoosier Daddy barbecue sauce, which you can get that at Fresh Thyme too. That's another sponsor I forgot to mention. Just an awesome woman. Hoosier Daddy, Heath Riles, JDQ Boom.
You got me interested. I'll take a peek at that one. Thank you, Dave.
Yes, sir. You're going to like it. I can tell.
All right. So my final question is, are there any good memories that you want to tell our viewers about? If you do, why do you remember that memory the most? So before you answer, I'd like you to end with something sentimental that just made you feel good inside and forget the world can be a cruel place. And a funny memory that made you fall on the floor laughing. It could be with your son. It could be with Great White Smokes. It could be your time with the Fowlers. A time meeting with my uncle. Your call, you want to answer it.
I think the best day was the day my son was born. I mean, I will just never forget all the anxiety of the whole night waiting and worrying about my wife and worrying about him. When I'm on my deathbed, I will remember looking at his little face the first time they brought him out to me and just locking eyes with him and thinking, right there's my ride or die. The guys that I grew up with, including your Uncle Joe, there are times I can just remember laughing so hard, my sides would just feel like they were going to split. There were so many comedians in our grade, but probably our senior skip day, we had a classmate's house that had a pond. It just seemed like at the end, after we all ate and we all played volleyball, it was almost like a battle royal of trying to throw each other in that pond. Some of the last days that some of us ever saw each other, a lot of us, like me and your uncle, we're still good friends, but there's a lot of those people that I haven't seen, in 25 years.
Yeah, maybe it's time to rekindle what you once upon a time have.
Life moves where it moves, and you go where you go.
Well, Dave, I think that's all for us. Is there any closing remarks or anything you'd like to promote, my friend? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I just support Sam and his podcast, the way that he's raising awareness about not the downside of autism, but the upside of it. When Down syndrome, I think so many people immediately move toward a negative. When I found out my son had Down syndrome, the number one thing people said to me was, "I'm sorry." And I couldn't understand that. It was like they were saying, "I'm sorry for something." And here I'm like, "You should be congratulating me. I'm having a son." It is not a doomsday thing. We have a great life, and he's just such a blast. I could not be happier than to have the guy that I get to hang out with every day. So I appreciate you, Sam. We're always in your corner, buddy. Whatever you need.
And we're always in your corner too. And because we're always in your corner, why don't you tell us where we can find Great White Smokes real quickly?
You can always find us. Food Truck Friday is a good place to catch us. But www.gwsbbq.com. From there, you can get us on email, by phone. You can find us on all social media outlets, all of them. Okay, so if you need to reach me, you can Google Great White Smoke, and there's about a million ways to get me.
Thank you again, Dave. Make sure to check out his food truck if you're in the area, and have a great day, Dave.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks for joining for this episode. Please join for another episode coming in very soon. I hope you enjoyed listening to me ramble. Thank you very much.
I ain't nothing but a simple man. They call me a redneck, a reckon that I am, but this thing's going on. Me mad down to the core. I have to work like a dog to make ends meet.